this and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here, and this is another episode of the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for listening to episode 74. I hope you all had a good weekend. And I want to start off by doing an IDPA recap. I had a special treat last week. Last Thursday night, I got a chance to meet one of my listeners, James. And we got to go shooting together. We got to shoot an IDPA match. We shot an indoor match in Fort Worth, Texas, Cross Timbers IDPA Club. We had a great time. It was just a short four-stage match, but it was a lot of fun, good camaraderie, excellent. I just love IDPA as a great chance to go practice gun handling skills, practice drawing, practice shooting on the move and stuff, and you're going to hear about some of that coming up. And so I'm going to talk about the experience that we had, and I know some of you who listen to this show, you're new shooters and you're new to IDPA and kind of checking it out. Not real sure if it's something that's for you. I hope that when you listen to this show that you make plans to get out to the next IDPA or USPSA match in your area. International Defensive Pistol Association, and then there's also United States Practical Shooting Association. That's what those acronyms mean. So I'm going to play an interview. After we got done shooting, I had a chance to interview James, and we talked about our experience. And it was kind of cool because we both had the same perspective on it. We both pretty much agreed that it's fun to come out and do. It's fun to get trigger time on your gun. You can get your gun to that 1,000-round trigger job faster by going out and shooting IDPA. It will sharpen your shooting skills. It will teach you how to shoot from underneath cover, around cover. Well, I guess I should call it concealment because it's really not cover. It's not going to stop bullets, but it's going to conceal you from your attacker. And we even had some situations where we had to shoot while we go down on one knee and shoot some upside down Mozambiques and stuff like that. Pretty cool. So I'm going to start the show by cutting to the interview. This is James and I talking about the experience that we had after shooting IDPA. When this is done, I got a few comments. We'll take a break, do some announcements, and then we'll get into my next topic. So even though today is Monday, this was recorded last Thursday night. Here you go. All right, I'm with James, one of my listeners, and we just got done shooting some IDPA. It's a Thursday night. We're in Fort Worth, and it's a Cross Timbers IDPA Club at the Winchester Gallery in Fort Worth. And James, relatively new to IDPA. How did you like it?
I thought it was a lot of fun. It's different. There's a lot of rules and a lot of things that you got to think about when you're
There is.
You know, when you're shooting and it kind of flushes you a little bit when you're starting out, but yeah. It gets easier as time goes on.
Well, and this is your third or fourth time?
Third match. Yes, my third match, and I've gotten better every time. So.
So what have you in just three matches? What have you learned from IDPA?
To slow down and control your shots more than trying to hurry through it. If you concentrate and take good shots, you'll do better even if you're a little bit slower.
But slow down and win.
Exactly. But and I have gotten faster and still keeping accurate shots, you know, just through these three matches. So
what was your favorite stage?
My favorite stage tonight or
yeah, tonight.
Oh, tonight was probably the last one because I did the best at it. But yeah, and that one was probably my favorite one, just based on the moving and shooting at the same time. I don't like as much the shooting behind cover kind of stuff. It seems more realistic to me to be moving and shooting at the same time.
Well, it is. And let me explain to everybody, that last stage we started off and we're contact distance from the barricade. And we had to, from one side of the barricade, we had to double tap three targets. And then you had to move out into the open and shoot two targets out in the open. Then we had to take a knee and Mozambique the last two targets from low cover.
Yes, and that was there was also a target in between, a no shoot target in front of the two.
Yeah, there was a no shoot
moving target.
Yeah, and for people who are new, Mozambique means two to the body, one to the head. But these were upside down Mozambiques. What did you think of that?
Well, they've had a couple of those in a couple of the matches I've done, and it's different. It's
the bad guys are doing a headstand.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, but same concept. It's
good. Good. Now you're shooting. James is shooting a Beretta. It's a PX4 subcompact, right?
Yes.
9mm.
9mm.
All right. See, and he's out here with his carry gun. That's what I like. What I like is he's out here getting. He's like me. You guys have know that I've committed the next year to shooting my Glock 19, and I borrowed that from Steve Z, who listens to this show. Not something that I invented, but I'm glad that I'm doing it. How do you like shooting your Beretta?
I like it, and you know, I've only put about, like I said, about 600 or 700 rounds through it, and it's getting better and better all the time. But I mean, I like shooting it, and I like the idea that I'm not, because there are some people who have different weapons, different things that they just use for competition for this stuff, and I'm here to just improve my own skills and trying to use the weapon I carry and improve my skills with that, because that's what I'm gonna have to be able to use. If the time comes.
Ah, a man after my own heart, because I'm big on that. I'm big on coming here and using your carry gun. There was a couple guys in there using some fancy STIs and things like that, and there's nothing wrong with that. STIs, if you're going to play the game of IDPA, is great, but I doubt that some of these guys actually carry that on their belt every day when they're walking around. What do you think?
No, and they got the big The magazine wells on there for faster reloads and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, I'm actually using the holster that I use, that I carry, you know, carry my weapon in every day. And so, like I said, it just, I think it's more beneficial for my purposes. What I'm not here to win the competition. I'm here to improve my skills and my weapons handling and familiarity with my weapons. So.
Yeah, I'm not here to win the competition, and even if I was, I can't. I'm not that good.
Neither am I.
But did you have fun? That's the key.
Oh, yeah, I had a lot of fun. And I've been back here a few times, and like I said, it gets better every time, and you get more into it, and it becomes more, you become more comfortable, and you just shoot better as the time goes on, and you get more familiarity with your weapon.
Okay, now here's a question, because there's a lot of new shooters that listen to this show. You've done this 3 times, right?
Yes.
Okay. How much of a better gun handler and better shot are you after just 3 IDPA matches than you were before you started?
Oh, considerably better. And it's the kind of things that you can't do on a regular range. You can't draw from your holster. You can't take some of the shots. And some of the things that we've done in here, the way that you crouch down and you're getting in different positions and you're doing things that you wouldn't be able to do on a range, and it causes you to really realize how hard some of those things are.
Yeah, well, you can do them on a range, but you get kicked off.
Yeah, they'd be in there kicking you out. But some of the things, they're harder if you've never done them, but as you do them, you actually become more comfortable in those positions and doing things like that. So.
Yeah, and as I've mentioned many times on this show, what I believe is a benefit of IDPA is that it gives you good gun handling skills. You improve your marksmanship. You learn how to draw from a holster. You learn how to acquire a sight picture. Shoot on the move a little bit. Sometimes shoot at targets that move. Things that you can't do when you stand there and plink at your ordinary range. Now, you and I were kind of discussing a little bit inside that match. We were talking about how some of this stuff is not real realistic to self-defense. What do you think?
Well, it's true that a lot of times, for one, like I was pointing out in there.
You're a military guy, so compare it.
Yeah, I had 12 years in the Marine Corps and was in Iraq and Somalia, and had a couple times where I was in combat, and just knowing that you step into areas where you don't know where the targets are going to be. And in the competition, they walk you through each stage before you shoot it and let you know where the targets are, which way you're going to move, what's allowed, what's not allowed, how many rounds you can have. And in a real situation, you're not going to have all that. You're going to reload when you can reload. You're going to have, you know, you're not going to know how many targets are out there. You may step around a corner and you think there's one. There may be 5. There may be 2.
Yeah.
There may only be one.
By the way, that was a train, folks. We're outside. We're actually standing outside the shooting range, and sure enough, while we're trying to record this, a train comes through. But go ahead. You know, one of the things that you said to me in there, James, that I thought was pretty cool, was you said, wouldn't it be kind of nice if they had a blind stage? In other words, nobody knew where the targets were. And one at a time, you walk into the shooting area, and, you know, at the sound of the buzzer, that's when you'd walk in, and that's when you'd finally know where the targets are. Because you're right, and that'd be kind of neat. In Iraq, or you were also in Somalia. Yes. In Iraq and Somalia, you didn't know where the targets were going to be, did you?
No, and a lot of times you didn't know who they were or or how many there was going to be.
Yeah.
And you don't know what kind of weapons they have pointing back at you. I mean, there's so many things that you can't necessarily simulate in here, but you could make it more realistic in a lot of ways.
Yeah. But, you know, and I'm sure there's people who listen to this that are IDPA experts, and they're going to say, well, Bob, we can't do that kind of stuff because of safety reasons, because there's beginning shooters that come here. And tell everybody about, we'll wrap this up in a minute, but tell everybody about your first time here, because I didn't get a chance to come shoot with you the first time. So what was the first time like?
Well, my first time here, it was a little daunting because, you know, I came in. We had to do a first-time shooters class. That's something they require here, safety purposes. They make you, you know, sit through the safety brief so you understand all the commands and all the things that they're going to tell you and the rules of the actual competition itself. But after you go through that, it was a half hour, and then actually going out to shoot, though, they were explaining and saying things like, you know, Mozambique, this target, do this target, do this hardcover here, this is this, this is this. And a lot of times I had to learn the hard way what they meant by those things because I didn't have somebody telling me. And so I would, you know, I lost a couple points, had a couple procedural things that I did wrong because I shot into a black target, which that was
supposed to be. That's the non-threat.
Well, and it was actually hardcover.
Or hardcover, all right.
It was supposed to be body armor. It was half black and half brown, and I shot the black part. I thought I was doing fine. I hit it. Great. I'm doing good. And then they turned around and told me I dropped all them points because I hit the black side. But,
yeah.
You know, little things like that you've learned along the way. And tonight I found out my magazine pouch is canted too far forward. So I need to change that according to the rules. So.
Actually, for concealed carry, I like the way your magazine pouches are. They're not legal for IDPA, but they're nice and comfortable and easy to access for concealed carry.
And that's why I have them that way. I mean, I didn't know there was a rule as far as how far those can be canted. But you learn something new, and you just kind of...
And basically, you know why that rule exists is because they feel you have an advantage. If they're canted forward like that, everybody else has to have them straight up and down. So you have a tactical, or you have a speed advantage.
Because I'm carrying it the way I normally would. So.
Well, and again, I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to open up a whole can of worms. But James, thanks. And thanks for listening to the show. And we're going to come back and shoot some more. We're going to do this more. I'm going to make a commitment to get out here and shoot more. It's not very often that I get a chance to actually meet my listeners and go shoot with listeners, and I'll do that as much as I can, so if anybody's interested, send me an email. But anything else you want to say about IDPA?
I would just say if you have any interest in IDPA, it's a lot of fun, and it's something that you get to know a lot of people, and there's a lot of people here, you know, police officers and things throughout the community. You get to meet a lot of people, and you build a camaraderie with them. I mean, I've only been here, like I said, three times over the last couple months, and already I know most of the people in here, you know, and you get to know them a little bit better, and it's really fun. People have a lot of fun in here, and everybody gets along, and they help each other out, give each other a little hard time sometimes, but...
Yeah. Yep. You know. And by the way, it was good. We had a couple cops in here shooting with us, and that's good to see. I wish they would make something like IDPA or USPSA. I wish they'd make it mandatory for police officers. And again, I'm not picking on police officers. I know some of them don't shoot enough, and it was good to see a couple of them in here with us tonight.
Well, and you see them carrying their entire rig with them, you know.
Yeah, he had his whole rig.
Yeah, and that's, I'm sure that's helpful for them, you know.
Well, he's practicing here like he's on duty.
Exactly, and he's got all his stuff so that, you know, it's going to be the same as if he were to come across some time he needed to use his weapon on the street. So,
yeah,
it's definitely good training for it, and it's a lot of fun. So,
thanks, man. James, appreciate it, and we'll come back and do this some more and have a lot of fun.
All right.
Thanks for interviewing on the show.
Thanks for doing a good show.
Take care.
Sounds like fun, huh? To all of you who are new, if you are not quite sure if you want to shoot IDPA, I hope you do. I hope that convinces you. James did great. I mean, this was only his third match. And I didn't do a whole lot better than he did. I've been doing this for, I've been shooting, let's see, competition, I'm sorry to say, kind of embarrassed. It's been about 4.5 years. I'm trying to think of this now. Yeah, I started shooting competition about a year after I got my concealed carry license. So yeah, which means I got some work to do. But to be honest with you, my head right now is focused on combat training, because I'm going to take the close-range gunfighting class that Suarez International is teaching in Tyler, Texas next month. So that's kind of where I'm focused, and as I mentioned in the interview, I'm sticking with my G19 for right now, and I'm going to let my Glock 34 warm up my safe for several months, because I want to get real good with this carry gun that I have. And I my perspective, some of you may disagree, but my whole perspective on this is shoot IDPA so that you can get better with your carry gun. And I would say a good mixture of IDPA and some good fighting skills training. If you can do that every year, if you can take one fighting class a year, in other words, one gunfighting class a year, and if you can mix that with going to IDPA a couple of times a month, I think you'll stay sharp. You know, as you know, it's not my goal to be the next Texas State IDPA champ. That isn't going to happen. I don't have that kind of dedication and commitment to it. Number one, I don't have the money to commit to that, to commit to what it's going to take. Number two, I don't have the time to do that. So it's my goal just to come out here and continue to stay sharp with my self-defense shooting skills. And so I think a mixture of competition and training. You know, somebody on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum put a post on there that said something about once you train to fight, you're not going to easily forget those skills as long as you're continuing to sharpen those skills. And I agree with that. I think he was referring to the fact that competition shooting is not going to make you lose the skills that you already know. Now, there is some argument about how competition might be able to, all of a sudden, it may cause you to develop some bad habits. That's what I'm trying to say. As you can see, I'm trying to say this carefully so that I don't upset anybody. But anyway, try it, folks. Get out to a club. It was only $15. It's $15 worth of a lot of fun. Tonight we only shot 4 stages, so I only went through about 70 rounds or so. Something like that. 70 rounds, 72 rounds. So it wasn't very expensive tonight to go out and get some good practical shooting. And you know what? It was indoors. And I don't get a chance to shoot indoors much. Most of the time I shoot at Collin County IDPA, which is outside. And, of course, outside we're typically shooting between 7 and 9 stages. But it was fun. You know, I was a little bit disappointed with myself. We had one stage where I think the farthest target was 10 yards, and there were 2 targets at about 7 yards, and I missed one target at 7 yards. That's inexcusable. I shouldn't have done that. But, you know, as they say, when that buzzer goes off, people get stupid. Just, you know, whenever you think you're good, just go to an IDPA match and let them hit that buzzer, and all of a sudden, everything just falls apart. It's amazing. I mean, because I've gone out and I've practiced with friends and done things perfectly while I'm out practicing with some friends. And then, of course, I get to an IDPA match, and that buzzer goes off, and I get stupid. So racing against that clock with everybody watching you shoot, that is some good pressure. And it's good to be able to respond to that. And I remember a podcast I did about a month and a half ago where I talked about how to overcome shooter anxiety. You might want to go back and listen to that. Okay, that's it. I'm going to go ahead and take about a 30-second break here because I'm coming to my next stop. And when I get done with that, I'll get on to the next topic. Talk to you soon.
An Australian law enforcement officer called their gun registration, quote, an elaborate system of arithmetic with no tangible aim. They also called its crime control use a fallacy. New Zealand police call their gun registration system useless. Canadian registration has cost 1,600% more than originally projected, and a top Canadian cop said it does nothing to take one illegal gun off the street. And in Germany, some people estimate that upwards of 80% of all guns there are still not registered. So why do some senators, and some presidents for that matter, think that it will work in America? Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News. Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, let's start this next segment with a little bit of listener feedback. One of the things I love about doing this podcast is I've done my best to make this a listener-based show and to get reactions and suggestions from all of you who listen to this. And so keep these emails coming. I love it. This is good, good stuff. And you guys have lots of ideas, lots of good ones, and you have a lot of topic suggestions for me to talk about. So keep it coming. One guy writes to me, Charlie sent me this, and I want to share this with you because it's pretty cool. He listens to both of my podcasts, this one and the Common Sense Survival Show that I do at todayssurvival.com. And he says, he was thanking me for the show, and he says that I keep things in the front of his mind. And that's what I intend to do, folks. I intend to just get you to think on this show. He writes, something I wanted to mention about a possible topic. This weekend, I will go to my mother-in-law's house to clean her gun. It might not sound that important, but she's 74 years old and alone in her home, and she's in a very rural setting. And since the death of my father-in-law, she's learned to shoot, and she keeps a Taurus 40 caliber semi-auto in her underwear drawer. I go over to her house a lot, but every once in a while, I bring my cleaning kit and go through the gun. The last pistol I purchased from her had the rounds in the magazine corroded to the magazine. That was a fun repair since the mag would not come out of the gun. Anyway, maybe you could mention something about helping out family that is not familiar with how to clean guns, how to practice safely, and how to shoot if something happens. She would never think to clean the gun. She would not think to rotate the ammo or go shoot the gun to stay familiar with it. And if something happens, I want her gun to work. I would hate to hear that she pulled the gun and it didn't go bang. Thanks, and keep up the good work, Charlie. All right, great email, Charlie. Here's my comments. First of all, I think that's cool. I think that's really cool that you're going to clean her gun. And yes, you bring up a really good point. To those of you who listen to this show, obviously you listen to this because you're into handguns or you're getting into handguns. And you've heard me talk about cleaning and maintenance and lubrication and carrying spare parts. And yes, you may have family members that are not as meticulous about their firearms as we are. And as Charlie says, they're doing themselves a huge disservice. They're not really defended if they can't rely on their handgun. Yeah, if you got some family members, here's what I would suggest. If you don't think that they're very responsible with the maintenance of their gun, first of all, invite them to go shooting and check out their firearm before you take them shooting. I think this is great that a 74-year-old woman living alone, first of all, is keeping a gun for protection. I love it. Love hearing stories like that. And this is something I've really never thought about and never talked about on this show. So thank you, Charlie. Take your family members shooting. First of all, it's a good family bonding experience. Second of all, it is a lot of fun. If you have the opportunity to teach them about gun maintenance, by all means, clean their gun, make sure nothing's rusted shut, make sure everything works. Yes, you're doing them a service. You're helping them stay protected. Think about this. How would you feel if, let's say you got a family member that's just not up on guns and they don't do a good enough job of taking care of them? I don't even care if they have a Glock. Glocks need to be taken care of. I hate hearing stuff, I hate reading stuff on the internet when people talk about, I've never cleaned my Glock in 10,000 rounds. That's bad. That's bad. I mean, you know, all guns need to be cleaned and lubricated, period. It's a great educational experience, and I actually had a personal experience like this that I want to talk to you about. My father-in-law, who doesn't do a lot of shooting, but he owns a lot of guns, came down to visit with us a few months ago, and he brought one of his 1911s. It is very, very old 1911, and he wanted to go shooting. And I asked him, I said, hey, do you mind if I take a look at your firearm? And he said, sure. So I double-checked and triple-checked to make sure it was unloaded. And I field-stripped his old 1911. And I got to tell you, the magazine was in horrible shape. The gun looked like it hadn't been lubed in 15 years. Nothing was rusted, amazingly enough. And so I took out my bottle of Militech. I love Militech. It's a great lubricant, and it's an anti-rust protectant as well. I love Militech. I don't represent them, but I've been using them for 5 or 6 years. Militech. Militech 1. Good stuff. And I just gave that thing a good cleaning, and first of all, and then a real good lube everywhere. Since it's 1911, I lubed it everywhere, every moving part that I could get my hands on. All I did was put a little bit of Militech on the end of a Q-tip, and I went through and I just swabbed down everything. I didn't overdo it. You got to be real careful you don't overdo lubrication. Even with a 1911, I think you could overdo it. But after I applied that stuff, it functioned a lot better, and I dry-fired it several times. I actually put some snap caps in there to make sure everything seemed like it was functioning properly, and then we went to the range. Guess what? Not a single jam. And I think we ran about 250 rounds through that thing. But what do you think would have happened if we'd have just taken the gun as is to the range? I think it would have been quite a frustrating experience. So here is a case where that gun was not maintained. And just like Charlie emailed me about his mother-in-law, same thing, folks. Yes, go do that. You're doing them a service. You're doing your loved ones a service by helping them clean their guns. And you know what? Actually, I think some people just don't do it because they're afraid of it. They're not quite sure. Especially, I can understand, sure, someone who's 74 years old, lady, she's probably afraid of trying to take that gun apart. Absolutely. I can understand that. So do it for them. Good point, Charlie. Good email. Thank you very much for sending that in. Way to go. Another email I want to tell you about comes from Damien, and he was telling me that he owns a Glock 36, which is a subcompact 45 single stack. It's the only single stack gun I know of that Glock makes, and he says he loves it. Good gun. Glock 36, a good gun, but he said he doesn't think that the ammo capacity is good enough for going to shoot something like IDPA, and he wanted to know what I thought of that. If I'm not mistaken, the Glock 36 is a single stack 45, holds 6 rounds in the mag, plus 1 in the gun, which means he would start the stage with 7 rounds. And he's also a Yankee, like me. He was born in Newark, New Jersey, and then moved here to Texas when he was 12. So, hey, Damien, we have something in common. We're both Yanks with a gun. And he's also a veteran, so I salute you, Damien. Thank you for your service to our country. Here's what I want to say. Go shoot IDPA anyway. I don't care if it's a Glock 36. If that's your carry gun, go shoot it. Go there with the intention of not winning the match. Just like in the beginning of this show when James and I were talking, you know, go shoot your carry gun. I'm a big believer in that. Don't worry about it. Later on, if you can afford it, if you can get a gun that's more competitive and you want to go just for the gaming aspect of IDPA and try to do well and try to place well and get into the CDP division and move up the ranks and try to increase your classification, that's great. But get to a match. Take that Glock 36. Who cares? Who cares if that's what you carry? Have at least 3, preferably 5 or 6 good magazines. Get a decent holster. Get some good magazine pouches. And you're ready to go. I encourage you, Damien, if you want to call me or email me, I'll take you to a match here locally in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. That invitation's open to anybody. Anybody listening to me from Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Tulsa, places that I frequent a lot because of my travels. If you want to go shooting, I'll try to make it, put it in my schedule. I'll make a business trip out of it. I'll come down when I'm done with my business. We'll go hit the range. We'll go to an IDPA match if we can find one, maybe on a weeknight. And you never know. I might even go with you on a Saturday. But, Damien, send me an email. Let's go to Cross Timbers in Fort Worth. Let's go to Collin County out in Greenville. Dallas Pistol Club has Saturday matches quite often. They're not quite IDPA-style matches, but they're still fun. Let's go practice your gun handling skills with your Glock 36. Get yourself some inexpensive 45 ACP ball ammo practice. Get about 300-400 rounds of that and dedicate that for several matches. Let's go shoot. By all means, I would suggest that you go do that. And so that wraps up some of the listener feedback. All right, for the next segment, I was going to talk about sighted shooting. And what I mean by that is using your sights versus not using your sights, and when to and when not to, and how important are sights. Because I know I've talked a little bit about this before. I was going to expand on it, but I'm going to wait until the next episode. Instead, I want to finish with another message for you. I just want to say this. I bought one of this man's books, a book that he co-authored, called The Warrior Mindset. It's on its way. So I'm going to close the show. You're not going to hear me after this. I just want to ask you a quick question. Are you a warrior or are you a victim? This is Bob Main, the Handgun World Show. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Stay on. Listen. This is how the show is going to end. And I'll catch you next time.
Thing that distinguishes them from every other creature, from the fireman and the emergency medical technician and the other people out there on the battlefield holding our society together, is the fact that A, they march towards the sound of the guns, and then B, they return fire. Every other creature on the face of the earth flees from the sound of the guns, and the warrior advances to the sound of the guns. That ability to advance towards interpersonal human aggression, number one, and then number two, to thrive and function in that realm of interpersonal human aggression, is the thing that distinguishes you as a warrior. And the degree to which you can understand that realm, master that realm, and function in that realm, is the degree to which you will, number one, survive, and number two, accomplish your mission. The thing you've got to realize is that after thermonuclear holocaust, this explosion of violent crime represents the single greatest threat to the existence of our civilization. If things get bad enough, people will always sacrifice liberty for security. They will always happily vote for someone who promises to make the trains run on time. And one thing that every dictatorship can always do is bring down the crime rate. All they have to do is systematically take your liberty away from you, and they will be able to bring down the crime rate. The individuals who are willing to advance toward the sound of the guns are absolutely, desperately needed in our time of need. The warrior never lets down the guard. The warrior is constantly ready, and in the process of constantly being ready, the warrior reduces the probability that bad things are going to happen. We have to study aggression and posturing. It's like a magic trick. If you see somebody do a magic trick, you're wowed by it. If you understand how the trick is done, it suddenly is not so potent. It's the same way with aggression. You've got to study it. You have to experience it. And then when it actually happens, it no longer astounds you. You're able to deal with it calmly. We want to develop warrior spirit to face human aggression. There are two types of aggression out there. There is defensive aggression. Its purpose is to escape. You see that all around you. You see suspects who are constantly pinging around, looking in opposite directions, looking around, trying to find a way to escape. And then there is predatory aggression. That is the real danger. The predatory aggression's goal is not to escape, it is to conquer. And you'll see individuals who are sitting there perfectly calm. There's no nonverbal cues. And then all of a sudden, bam, they're in action. And action is faster than reaction. You've got to monitor the suspect. Normal levels of arousal represents a problem, defensive aggression. No arousal may represent a very big problem, predatory aggression. But understand this. Your opponent has a home court advantage. You go into his lair, you go into his house, you go into his bar, you touch his kids, you go where they are. In nature, the predator in his lair almost never loses. It combines the predatory and the defensive aggression. That's why the lion tamer is in the cage before the lions come in. If you did it the other way around, you'd be paying to see an entirely different kind of show. Somebody was telling me about a criminal that he was interviewing. And essentially what the criminal said was, he said, you know the difference between the cops and the crooks? I said, the cops, it's an 8-hour-a-day job. For us, it's a 24-hour-a-day of job. It's a way of life. Who's going to win? The warrior can meet the predator and survive. The goal becomes to learn to fight with intent and will, not fear and panic. Ultimately, the goal is to nurture the warrior spirit, to be transformed into a warrior. Now, if they took you as a warrior and they did not give you a gun, would that make our civilization safer? No. If we gave you that instrument and didn't teach you how to hit things with it, would that make you safer? Of course not. Obviously, if you have the gun, you've got to be able to hit the desired target with the gun. Now, if we gave you the gun and taught you how to hit things with it, and then did not psychologically prepare you to pull the trigger, would that make us safer? Well, no. Because three things have to happen. Number one, you have to have the gun. Number two, you have to be able to use the gun. Number three, you have to be willing to use the gun. And we're going to explore the dynamics of another human being looking at you across the sights and you pulling the trigger and snuffing their life out. We don't want to kill. That's not the goal. We want to prevent using deadly force. And yet, when it comes down to that critical moment, the thing that distinguishes you from the rest of our society is that you are licensed, required by our society at the critical moment, under the right circumstances, to take a human life. We don't want to kill. That's not the goal. We want to deter. And if we do not address that, then we have failed to prepare ourselves for the mission that lies before us and the task that our civilization has given to us. So we're going to take a look at that. We're going to take a look at this process of using deadly force. And most importantly, we're going to take a look at the process of surviving afterwards. If you are to live and function in combat, you must understand all the dynamics that will happen in that realm. And so let's take a look at the realities of combat.
What is that moment really like when you take a human life? You are facing a deadly threat right now. Your life is on the line. Can you act decisively and with self-confidence? Even if your actions ultimately mean that you take a human life, do you believe in yourself so deeply that you know you'll do the right thing? You want the answers to be yes. But to be absolutely certain at the moment of truth, you may need to address certain ethical and religious issues ahead of time. To survive, to really survive, you will need a commitment to defend yourself that is ironclad.